Now let's please turn in our Bibles to the book of Nahum, page 782. We're doing this series of sermons on Sunday afternoon, major lessons from the minor prophets. And we're looking at each book per week to see what lessons each of these minor prophets teaches us. And we've arrived at the book of Nahum. Now, let me just say at the outset by way of introduction that the book of Nahum is unique in two ways. When you read all the minor prophets from Hosea all the way to Malachi, these 12 books, they all have a certain pattern to them, and Nahum alone breaks that pattern. And there are two ways in which Nahum breaks that pattern. In the first place, there's very, very little in this book that is, if I may put it like this, of encouragement. Of the three chapters that you read of Nahum, there's only about three or four verses that you go away saying, well, that is of encouragement. Most of the verses, the vast majority of the book of Nahum is about judgment. Now, the other minor prophets, of course, speak about judgment, but they usually end their prophecy with some words to the elect of God, to the remnant of God, giving them encouragement and saying to them, yes, there is a lot of judgment, but you, the remnant of God, there is good news for you. And usually, the minor prophets ends with promises about the future, about the latter days, and how God will build His kingdom in the latter days. Nahum has none of that. There are, as I say, three or four verses that are of encouragement, and I will bring them to your notice, but it is largely a book about judgment. So that is the first, if I may say, unique feature of this book. The second unique feature of this book is that the other prophets were sent to preach. Isaiah was sent to the people of Jerusalem. Jeremiah was sent to the people of Jerusalem. Micah was sent both to Jerusalem and to Samaria. Jonah was sent to Nineveh to preach, to go and speak the word of God. Nahum, it seems, wrote a book and sent the book to Nineveh. Did you notice verse 1? An oracle concerning Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum of Elkosh. So this is a book written not for the people of Judah, not for the people of Israel. This was a book that God wrote to the people of Nineveh. And God inspired and instructed Nahum to write this book and then to send it to Nineveh. Because you don't read of preaching. The word speak or preach doesn't occur in the book of Nahum. It does in the other prophets that he goes and he speaks, an oracle of God. But not here. This is the only time in the minor prophets that the word book is used. This is a book that Nahum wrote and it was sent to Nineveh. Now that tells you why there are so few encouraging verses in it. This wasn't for Jerusalem. This wasn't for the Jewish people. Now there is mention of Jewish people in it and the blessings that they will receive from God. But this was a message to the people of Nineveh. This wasn't for God's people. And so there are very few encouraging verses in it because it is to a city that was very greatly in sin, as we shall see. So a couple of things there about Nahum, very few verses of encouragement, and the fact that it is a book that was written and sent to the people of Nineveh. Now, what is this book about? What does this book teach us? What do we learn from it? Yes, it was sent to the people of Nineveh, and yes, there is a lot of judgment in it. But what do we learn from it? Well, I have three lessons that I want to teach you about God. This is a book about God. This is a book where God reveals himself, where he reveals his character to them. There's nothing new. I'm sure the points that I've made before, but we do see them in a new way and in a new light. So three things about God from the book of Nahum. And the first is this. This book teaches us that God is sovereign. God is ruler. Look at it from verse 3, chapter 1 and verse 3. The Lord is slow to anger and great in power. The Lord will by no means clear the guilty. And then he begins this section in his prophecy. His way is in whirlwind and storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. He rebukes the sea and makes it dry. He dries up all the rivers. Bashan and Carmel wither. The bloom of Lebanon withers. The mountains quake before him. The hills melt. The earth heaves before him. The world and all who dwell in it. Who can stand before his indignation? Who can endure the heat of his anger? And so on. You see what he does? He sort of calls upon the whole of creation. He talks about the whirlwind. He talks about the cloud. He talks about the dust. He talks about the sea. He talks about the rivers. He talks about the mountains, about the hills, and the whole earth heaving before God, and the whole world and all who dwell in it. This is language that is saying to the people of Nineveh, God is sovereign. God is ruler. Now, there is a reason for this, this theme of the sovereignty of God. I've only given you some verses, but if you read through the book of Nahum, this theme of the sovereignty of God occurs again and again. There is a reason for this. If I were to give you a blank sheet of paper, and I were to say to you, write down the great empires that have been in history. Well, I guess most of us would put down Rome, because, of course, the Roman Empire was a huge empire. It included large parts of England and went all the way to Persia. I guess we would include the British Empire, again, one of the great empires, indeed, the greatest empire I think the world has ever known. But I wonder how many of us, in a list of empires, would put down Assyria. I mean, how many of us know about Assyria and the Assyrian Empire? And yet, you know, when you study history chronologically, that is to say, date after date after date, the first ever major empire that the world ever knew was the Assyrian Empire. And it was to the capital of the Assyrian Empire, to Nineveh, that this book went. The Assyrian Empire, when this book was written, was the most of what is today Turkey, most of what is today Egypt, most of what is today Israel, Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, parts of Iran. So you're going from Turkey here in the West, and you're sweeping across the whole of Turkey, and then into Syria, and you're going south into Israel and Egypt, and you're going further west, and you're taking in Lebanon and south. You're going further west, and you're taking in Iraq, and you're going into Iran. It's a huge area of the world. That was one empire. It was the first empire, the first time such a large part of the world was under one particular king. Now, after Assyria, of course, came other kingdoms. And so this idea of one king controlling a large geographical area began to become common. But it never occurred until Assyria became the first great empire. And its capital was Nineveh. And the Assyrian kings had this idea that they were the sovereign rulers of the universe. I use those words advisedly because one of the fascinating things about the Assyrian Empire is that we know so much about it. There is huge amounts of literature that has been discovered. huge amounts of writing by the Assyrians that has been discovered and deciphered. If you've ever been to the British Museum in London and you've gone to the antiquities section, there's a whole section on the Assyrian Empire. I think most of us, when we visit the British Museum, we immediately think of Egypt and Tutankhamun and all these sort of things. And you see this notice saying Assyria, and you're saying, I don't know what Assyria is all about. I want something more exciting. But actually, there's a huge amount of material there in the British Museum from Assyria. All of this written down and deciphered. It's actually a very, very interesting story. If I may just in a couple of minutes explain it to you. Back in the 1830s, so 200 years ago, when the Ottoman Empire was ruling, the French sent an ambassador to the part of the world that which is now Iraq. And this particular Frenchman, who was a diplomat, was also a historian. And he came upon these ruins. He didn't know what they were, but he was traveling around Iraq. And he came upon these ruins. And he began a private dig of his own. He employed people with his own money and said, I want to dig this. And for 5 years, they dug. And then he was posted somewhere else. But in the meantime, the British sent a diplomat again to the same part of Iraq. And this man also was a historian. This is all in the providences of God. And he heard about this Frenchman's discoveries. And so he went to this area. And he sponsored a dig as well. And they began to dig and to dig. And they unearthed Nineveh. The ruins of Nineveh. Now the palace, the king's palace alone was half the size of Clevedon. It was a huge palace. The city was huge. The city walls have been discovered. And the palace has been discovered. And the houses around and so on. And it's a huge area. Because it was a huge empire, a wealthy empire. And the kings of this empire, we know their names. Some of them are in the Bible. Tiglath-Pileser III is in the Bible. Ashurbanipal, not in the Bible, but well known as the king of the Assyrians. They wrote these documents about how powerful they were. And they would say, I, Tiglath-Pileser, or I, Ashurbanipal, I am the king of the universe. I rule the universe. All nations fall before me. All nations bow before me. All nations pay tribute to me. And this is what these kings were doing. They were claiming complete sovereignty and complete rule. And then one day, it's a remarkable picture, isn't it? That one day, a book arrives in Nineveh. Now, writing was known, as I've said, we've discovered huge amounts of writing already. So writing was well known in Assyria. But this book arrives. And somebody says, you know, somebody in far away Judah, some unknown man called Nahum, has written a book. And the book is about us. It's about Assyria. And here it is. Now, I don't know how widespread this book was. I don't know if the king ever saw it. But God spoke to the people of Nineveh. And God said in this book to the people of Nineveh, you think your kings are sovereign. You think your kings are the rulers of the universe. Actually, they are not. There is a God in heaven who is ruler of the universe. And so these language that Nahum uses, second part of verse 3, his way is in whirlwind and storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. He rebukes the sea and makes it dry. He dries up all the rivers. Bashan and Carmel wither. The bloom of Lebanon withers. The mountains quake before him. The hills melt. The earth heaves before him. The world and all who dwell in it. You see, it's language of God's sovereign rule. Now, of course, Nahum, although it was a book that was sent to the people of Nineveh, a copy was obviously kept by the Jewish people and was put in the Hebrew Bible as a part of the inspired word of God. And it is there for encouragement for God's people. Yes, well, this was a time when they were living, and Assyria is this mighty empire. But God is saying to his people, the Assyrian king is not the one who is sovereign. I am sovereign. Now, for us today, this is so relevant. Graham and I were speaking before our service, and Graham was telling me about how one of the editions of the Bible, when they were being translated, the people, when they came to the Old Testament, translated the Psalms and then the Minor Prophets. Because the Minor Prophets are so contemporary, the Minor Prophets are so relevant. And we live in a world where there are rulers who think they are the sovereign rulers. There's a man in the White House who thinks he controls large parts of the world, and he only has to snap his fingers and he can destroy Iran, and he only has to snap his fingers and he can destroy other parts of the world, and he can take over Greenland and so on. Now, only speaking on one man, but there are so many others like that. There's a man in Tehran, the ruler of Iran, who thinks he is the great ruler and he will not be beaten by the man in the White House. So there are these people, aren't they, who think they are sovereign. There's a man in Moscow who thinks Ukraine belongs to him, and so he sent an army into the Ukraine to say, just go and get it for me. And we look at these men and we think, here are men who undoubtedly have enormous power, but they are not sovereign. They are not the rulers of the universe. God alone is sovereign. God alone rules. That is a message of comfort to God's people. Do not become anxious and do not become worried when you see these people exercising their powers and making their claims. God alone rules. So that's the first message of the book of Nahum. God is sovereign. But then there's a second message in the book of Nahum. And the second message, of course, is this, that God is holy. God is holy. This is a book about judgment. I'm going to read just a few verses. Will you go with me to chapter 2 and from verse 13? Chapter 2 and verse 13. God's words to the people of Nineveh. And God says to the people of Nineveh, behold, I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts, and I will burn your chariots in smoke, and the sword shall devour your young lions. I will cut off your prey from the earth, and the voice of your messengers shall no longer be heard. And then look at it from chapter 3 and verse 5. Again those words, behold, I am against you, declares the Lord of hosts, and will lift up your skirts over your face. I will make nations look at your nakedness and kingdoms at your shame. I will throw filth at you and treat you with contempt and make you a spectacle. And all who look at you will shrink from you and say, wasted is Nineveh, who will grieve for her? Where shall I seek comforters for you? Are you better than Thebes that sat by the Nile with water around her, her rampart a sea and water her wall? Cush was her strength, Egypt too, and that without limit. Put and Libyans were her helpers. Yet she became an exile. She went into captivity. Her infants were dashed in pieces at the head of every street. For her honored men, lots were cast, and all her great men were bound in chains. God pronouncing judgment upon the people of Nineveh. Because the Assyrian kingdom was famous not only for its greatness, it was undoubtedly a great empire. It was known not only for her armies, who were undoubtedly the greatest armies of the day, but they were known for their cruelty. This was a kind of a national policy that they had adopted. So when they went to war with a nation and they defeated that nation, the command was given, our policy now is to ill-treat those people. It is to be deliberately cruel to them. It is to put to death the men who fought for her in a particularly cruel way. It is to deal with their women and children in a particularly cruel way, so that our cruelty becomes a byword. We become famous for our cruelty. This was the policy that the kings of Assyria pursued. There's a famous document describing their war against the Egyptians. because Egypt was at this time a mighty kingdom, and Assyria and Egypt had a war, and Assyria defeated Egypt, and Egypt was subdued. This is referred to in verse 8 of chapter 3, where it talks about Thebes. Thebes was the capital of Egypt. Are you better than Thebes that sat by the Nile? And in verse 9, Egypt without her limit. So this war is described there because the Assyrians overcame the Egyptians. But then once they had defeated the Egyptians, a particular reign of cruelty began, and it is described in the documents that have been discovered and deciphered of how terrible they were in treating the people. And so God looks at Nineveh and God says, you've done terrible things. You've sinned in a terrible way, and you've sinned against a holy God. And God will not look upon sin and just overlook it. He will not leave sin unpunished, but God will judge sin. Do you know one of the most disturbing things about the book of Nahum? It's only 120 years since Jonah preached there. Now we might say 120 years, that's a long time. That's actually only four generations. In the course of history, in the great scheme of things, 120 years isn't that long. I mean, a nation that has had a tremendous revival, you'd have thought 100 years later, the memory of that would still be there, that Jonah came and preached at Nineveh, and God granted salvation, and the whole city was saved. Because even in the days of Jonah, the city was known for her cruelty, but God was gracious to them, but they reverted to their cruelty. That revival had no impact upon them in the long term. The next generations, there was no impact upon them. They reverted to their cruelty. And so God judged Nineveh. And God judged the Assyrian Empire. And within a few years of Nahum's prophecy, Nineveh was crushed. And Nineveh disappeared from the maps. That's why today, when you speak about the great empires of the world, and people might say, well, Rome, and I think there was a Greek empire, and I think there was a Mongolian empire, but hardly anybody mentions the Assyrian empire. Yet it was a very great empire. But because of their cruelty, God judged them, and God wiped them from the map of the earth. Today we don't hear of the Assyrian empire. God is holy, and God judges sin. Now again, this book finds its way in the Hebrew Bible because it is there as a reminder to God's people. It is there as a warning to us. And God is saying to all people, if you fall into sin, you will face judgment. But it is also an encouragement, because the people of God have seen what the Assyrians have done, their cruelty. It was the Assyrians who defeated the northern kingdom Israel and took Israel into exile. It was Assyria who did this. And they treated the northern 10 tribes very badly. Well, here is a message of prophecy, a message of comfort. God will judge those who treat his people badly. So we see the first lesson, God is sovereign. We see the second lesson, God is holy. But then a sigh of relief, because the third lesson is God is gracious and God is merciful. Yes, it is a dark book. It is a book full of judgment. I cannot pretend that it's a book full of delight and grace and so on. It's a book of judgment. I've read through Nahum 6 times this week, every day, sometimes twice a day. And it's undoubtedly a very dark book. But there are some light, some flashes of light in this book. And I think verse 7 in particular of chapter 1 is one of the great verses of the Bible. Because in a book that's all about judgment, you have verse 7 of chapter 1. Look at this verse. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble. He knows those who take refuge in him. Let's just unpack that briefly. The Lord is good. That means God is upright. God is not corrupt. God is not going to be stained by sin. God cannot be bought off. God cannot be corrupted. God will not in any way compromise his holy standards. He is good. But more than that, he is a stronghold. Now again, when you see it in its context, because you've got this mighty empire, Assyria, and you've got its mighty city of Nineveh. The walls of Nineveh are still there because they were high, thick walls. Apparently, you could ride 3 chariots abreast on the walls of Nineveh. They were so wide. And apparently, parts of those walls are still standing. So it was this mighty city, a stronghold. But God says to his people, he is a stronghold. The Lord is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble. How often do we flee to the Lord in the day of trouble? You have anxiety, you have worry, you have difficulties. Go to the Lord. And then the final thing he says in verse 7, he knows those who take refuge in him. That word know, particularly in the Old Testament, it's a word that means he has intimate knowledge. He knows everything. So when you go to the Lord in your weakness and you say to the Lord, I'm having difficulty, I'm having troubles, my faith is weak, or I'm having difficulty with that sin or with that person, with that situation, this family situation causes me difficulty. The Lord looks upon us. The Lord gives all his attention to us. God is not like man. He's not distracted by more important things. Every one of his child is important to him. Every one of his child, he looks upon each one and gives each one of his children. And there are millions of us in the world. He gives each of his children all his attention. And he knows everything about our situation. He knows the fears, the anxieties, the worries, the weaknesses we have. He knows us. In Psalm 103, as a father has compassion upon his children, so the Lord has compassion upon those who fear him. I love that verse. Because my father knew me. Your father knew you. I would guess my father knew me more than any other man. Because I was his son and I was his youngest son. And right from a very, very young age, we had a relationship, just as we all did. And many times we would talk and my father would make time for me and we would sit and we would talk. And as I grew, I remember thinking, my dad knows me. I remember certainly a few situations where I would go to him and I would say, Dad, I think I need to talk to you. And he said, yes, I know. This is a problem, isn't it? This is a situation, isn't it, that you're worried about. Our fathers know us. Well, Psalm 103 says, as a father has compassion upon his children, so the Lord has compassion upon those who fear him, because he is our father. So there are words of grace in this dark book. Verse 7, the Lord is good. The Lord is a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knows intimately those who take refuge in him. There are other verses here which are of promise to God's people. So for example, he says in chapter 2 and verse 2, the Lord is restoring the majesty of Jacob as the majesty of Israel. For plunderers have plundered them and ruined their branches. The Lord is restoring his people. Assyria have come and Assyria have destroyed the northern kingdom. And Assyria attacked Jerusalem. And Assyria surrounded Jerusalem with her armies. I'm sure you know this story, that one day Hezekiah the king woke up and the Assyrian army was surrounding Jerusalem and they were going to destroy Jerusalem. And they sent a letter to Hezekiah saying, you might as well surrender. Look at what we've done to Egypt. Look at what we've done to your northern people in Israel. Look at how we've destroyed them. Look at our kingdom that stretches from Turkey all the way to Iran, all the way to Egypt, this mighty kingdom. They send a letter to Hezekiah saying, you might as well surrender. And Hezekiah was a godly man. And Hezekiah took the letter to the temple. And Hezekiah bowed before the Lord and laid the temple, the letter that the Assyrians had sent before the Lord and said to the Lord, this is what the Assyrians are threatening us. And the Bible says the next day he woke up and the entire Assyrian army had been killed because the angel of the Lord had come in the night and destroyed the entire army. That actually was the end of the Assyrian Empire. That's how the Assyrian Empire lost its empire, because it lost a large part of its army in the siege of Jerusalem. So the Lord restored his people despite the Assyrians' attacks, and the Lord looked upon them with grace and mercy. He was a stronghold in the day of trouble, and he knew those who took refuge in him. So three lessons from Nahum. God is sovereign, and God is holy, and God is gracious and merciful to his people.